Welcome to The Frenzy.
I'm Melissa Carter.
And I'm Jen Hobby. The Frenzy's mission is to celebrate friendships over 40.
We believe that women can thrive through authentic relationships, self-discovery, and spiritual exploration.
Our decades-long friendship continues to grow because we are willing to go there and share our truths through life's highs and lows.
That's why The Frenzy is here, to hold space for women who are 40 and older, because at this age, your story matters more than ever.
Today, we welcome Karen J. Hardwick to The Frenzy. Karen is a globally recognized leadership consultant, clinically and spiritually trained psychotherapist, and a believer in all things connection. Karen helps transform the lives and performance of thousands of leaders at companies like ESPN, Turner Broadcasting, UPS, Crawford & Company, just to name a few. And Karen is also an author. Her new book, The Connected Leader, 7 Strategies to Empower Your True Self and Inspire Others, is going to be available November 23rd. Karen believes that connecting to the power of our story heals, awakens, and connects us. Karen, welcome to The Frenzy.
Oh, so much fun to be here. Thank you for having me, Melissa, Jen, thank you.
I know it's kind of feeling like you're sitting in the hot seat hearing your own accolades, but I mean, quite a resume that you have, and congratulations on the new book.
So exciting. I mean, the writing life is such a privilege, and then the publishing world is completely like drinking from a fire hose.
Oh my gosh, I bet. Well, Karen, there is so much to learn from you. I mean, I just can't wait to dive into this conversation, but I'd love to get to know your story a bit first. And as I understand it, the seed of your story starts at 10 years old, taking care of your mother. So would you be okay to share that part of your story and how it's led you to this epiphany in your life?
Yeah, it's been a long journey, right? When I was 10, my mother was diagnosed with a terminal illness, and she spent 12 years dying, and I spent over 4,000 days trying to stop that from happening. So what that meant for me at that time was I thought I was really meant to be strong and caretaking and put everyone else's needs in front of mine. I mean, I was not prepared at 10 years old to be an adult, but adulting I was doing. And while I was very focused on her, what happened was I was not given any space to really focus on me. Mm-hmm. So I say all of that now with the perspective of being where I am in this space in life. So there's an awful lot I've learned over the years that have brought me to where I am today, including unpacking that grief-filled childhood and adolescence I had. It also gave me tremendous strength and resilience and the belief in God and deepened my faith. So it did some really tremendous things, Jen and Melissa, but it also left me with a lot of baggage that even a forklift couldn't lift at times. I mean, it's this heavy stuff in terms of me learning that I didn't have to be a superhero.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much in that. It reminds me, my father had a heart attack and was diagnosed with cancer when I was in high school. He didn't pass until I was in my 30s, but I always saw him as a dying figure. And so when you said that, it makes me think that had to dramatically affect your relationship with your mother. You couldn't have like the normal, so to speak, relationship where, you know, you're not thinking about death, right? Where that's, at least in my experience, that's all I thought about when I saw my father. So, right. And that's something that I've had to deal with as an adult, where it's almost like I'm kind of helping myself not do that in hindsight. Are you able to do that?
You know, I dedicated the book to her because she really is on every page. The legacy that she left is not necessarily only that of a young dying woman. To know my mother was to know that she could gather people in our very shabby living room because people wanted to be with her even as she was dying. My friends, our cousins wanted to come and be with her. She was an encouraging figure as much as she also balanced her own tremendous anxiety and fear and grief. So I think life for us is about living in the and. So my mother had tremendous struggles that impacted all of us in the family in different ways. And she was also this inspiring figure for me. So when I think of her now, I think a lot of her wisdom. I think of her love. I think of her courage. All she wanted to do was to see us all in college. And she got that wish. We were the first generation in our family to go to college. So there's a lot about my mother that I know I wouldn't have today if it wasn't for her strength.
And how does her strength help you as a mother?
Well, I mean, man, parenting is not for the faint-hearted, right?
Amen, sister.
True.
Preach.
I mean, who thought this was a good idea, right? However, it's the most amazing journey. So again, living in the end, not for the faint-hearted, and it's the most amazing thing. My son and I were in Montana just a few weeks ago, and his girlfriend snapped a picture of us walking side by side, and it's now one of my most favorite photographs because it embodies the relationship that Matthew and I have. We've always been walking side by side. What I've had to learn, though, Jen and Melissa, is, look, he needs me to walk by his side. He doesn't need me to take his hand and tell him how to walk. So as he's gotten older, I've had to learn how to let go and how to not let my fears impact letting go.
That is so big. I know so many mothers that don't make that transition and still continue to try to parent their adult children. Talk to our audience about how you've taken those steps to, instead of being his parent, walking side by side and being his friend.
So it all really comes down to my own sense of recovery. I am a grateful member of the 12-step community, and that is nothing but daily lessons and letting go. Just surrendering to the mess that we can sometimes make for ourselves and realize that the more we surrender and accept that in a humble, self-compassionate way, we can let other people have their journey too. Because from a parenting perspective, the greatest gift that we can give our kids, and I didn't always give this to Matthew, was the ability for them to understand that they too have their own wisdom. And if we keep coming in to their lane, it interferes with their process. It interferes with them understanding, I can do this. I can recover from a mistake. I can learn. I can forge my own path, whether it be a really celebratory path or whether it be a path I need to kind of course correct.
You know, I want to transition to leadership based on what Jen just said, too, because I think it also keeps the mothers from being able to find their own ways, right? Like, because I think a lot of mothers who still mother their children are afraid of what the next stage of life holds for them. They're worried about the loneliness and not being needed and not being important. So how did you transition, you know, this sacrificial self into someone who is a leader? And maybe it's not a transition, maybe it's recognizing in that sacrifice that you do have leadership skills.
So I think we're all leaders. Any of us who have people entrusted to our care, I mean, whether we're CEOs, whether we're stay-at-home parents, whether we're high school students who are leading our peers, we are all leaders. And so one of the things that I think is really important in terms of leadership is understanding that at different phases in our life, Melissa, we can allow ourselves to dig deep. So I don't believe that we can lead other people or connect to other people until we learn to lead ourselves until we learn to connect with ourselves. So like you talk about in the intro to your podcast, leadership is a journey of self-discovery, whether we're leading in the family room, the kitchen, the boardroom. Mm-hmm. Did I answer your question or is that?
Well, it's just, we always, you know, Jen and I are always encouraging women to understand they have a lot of self-sufficiency, and for a lot of women that is tough for them. And as they get older, they add that insecurity of my body's not what it used to be. You know, my skin's not what it used to be. You know, I'm hitting menopause, like all these added insecurities that women could stack on themselves after they reach the age of 40. Just we're trying to reverse that, where age is a beautiful thing and that you have the skill set that you can do whatever it is you want to do.
And I believe that's true for most of us. And that's the most courageous work. Mm-hmm. That's the most courageous work, to believe that we are worthy of radical self-care, of solitude, of being happy, of finding out what works for us. But it's not as easy for many people as we can make it sound in a book or on a podcast, because it's hard work to say, I matter.
And what would be some of the first steps to take towards growing in that direction of believing that you're worth the solitude and believing that you matter?
I think it all goes back to developing some daily practice of reflection to quiet the noise outside of ourselves. And that could include the needs of everybody else, right? So I'm a recovering higher power. I really believe that my job was to rescue everybody. I had to stop that noise. I had to admit that to myself. And then I had to decide, what can I do on a daily basis to put myself on my priority list? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for women, to figure out, what am I thinking? What do I feel? But we can't do that necessarily in the midst of errand running or board meetings or doing things for other people. We have to carve out some time to hear that wisdom inside of ourselves.
Well, and Karen, you know, you talk about how you were 10 years old when your mother was diagnosed, and that's a 10-year-old perspective of what's going on in the world, right? And so, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking, well, of course, a 10-year-old has a different reaction to this diagnosis than a 40-year-old would. And so, you know, something maybe not as extreme as that, but I do think that we also, to your point about letting go, have to understand that our perspective is different as we get older. So even though we may be afraid of something that we learned to be afraid of in our 20s or 30s, well, guess what? Now that we're in our 40s and 50s and 60s and beyond, our perspective's different. There's no reason potentially to be afraid of that. So I do think for a lot of women, you talk about the hard work, it's inside work and it's mental work to almost diffuse the voice in our head, not the voice that somebody else is saying to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we all have that struggle. I said to a C-level female executive the other day, how are you hustling for approval? And at first she was like, what? I'm not hustling for approval. You know, look how successful I am. But the following week she came back to me and she said, you were right. There's so many things I still do, even at the top of my game, that's about accumulating accolades from other people. And look, that feels good. There's nothing in and of itself wrong with that. We have to also learn to give ourselves the sense that we are worthy as we are. That has nothing to do with our outside accomplishments. So we have to slow everything down in order to start making friends with who we are. Learning to be our best friend.
Oh, this is so good. In our harried culture, right? It seems that we, even amidst this pandemic, still have this hustle, quote unquote, crazy busy culture. Right. How do we carve out this space for ourselves to be the leaders we want to be the parents we want to be the calm friends that we want to be amidst this culture?
I honestly don't think there's any magic bullet. I mean, we want a quick fix, and none of this is microwavable, right? We're just not.
right.
I mean, I like to think of life more like a slow cooker instead of a microwave.
I like this.
But here's one thing, again, what works for me doesn't mean it works for everyone. So I'm just share my wisdom in the spirit of that. I like to believe that how I do the morning is how I do the day. So what that means for me is I have to have an hour immediately upon waking for my coffee, for my prayer time, for my meditation time, for my yoga, for whatever I do in that hour, which meant that when my son was little, I was getting up super early. Because one of the things that I realized is if I didn't have that time, and maybe it was 30 minutes during a season in my life, but now it's a little bit longer. If I didn't have that time, I approached my life, my day, always feeling like I was running behind.
Yes. Right? Oh my gosh. Yes.
And disconnected from myself. So again, we can't connect to anybody in healthy ways unless we connect to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest compliments I got was recently a friend of mine said that my son's girlfriend told her how calm I was. I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, honestly, she hasn't seen the really scary parts of me, but I think the morning meditation time helps to ground me.
I agree with you because I find that I personally am someone who, if I'm in a rush, that does not, I'm terrible at that. I'm not that person. And so I will purposely in my mind trick myself, like I have a 7-year-old son. So I trick myself into what time we need to leave, what time I need to get him up, what time I need to get him dressed. And I give myself 10, 15 extra minutes. So yes. I'm always ahead so that if there's a problem, I don't take it out on him. If he doesn't, you know, if he's being goofy or if he spills something on his shirt, we have to change it, whatever. Like I purposely try not to be so to the minute because I don't want to become impatient with him and teach him to be that way.
Perfect. Perfect. I mean, we have to build in that safety net around us. Otherwise, we do things that we don't want to be doing. We come across as too intense or demanding or like a sergeant barking out orders, right?
Mm-hmm. Instead of calling it anger, he called it madness. And there was one time that when he was about 5 years old, he looked at me and he said, "This madness has to stop."
I love that.
And that sobered me up pretty fast.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I love that because he was right. It is madness, right?
Right.
Oh, I love so that. I love that.
I love the way kids can be our teachers.
Absolutely.
Oh, I say to Matthew all the time, whether you know it or not, you are raising me.
Mm-hmm.
You're raising me.
Yeah.
Karen, I want to talk about your leadership consultant side of you. You have worked with thousands of leaders at big time companies that are really shaping our culture. What's like the most common issue that you would say comes up for leaders?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say the biggest issue is their inability to embrace their humanity. So in other words, I don't think we're leaders having a leadership crisis. I honestly don't. I think we're leaders having a human being crisis. I believe that many folks in the workplace think they have to leave their humanity behind. So in order to get ahead, they're focused on professional goals and they leave behind the emotional, relational healing and development that also needs to ride shotgun with leadership. So the more disconnected that people are from their own self-awareness and their ability to change, the less likely they are to form psychologically safe places for their people at work.
Millennials have gotten a bad rap, and I'm guilty of of criticizing millennials. I'm a Gen Xer. I always have to say that. But I because their reputation is they're lazy. They don't get things done fast enough. They want too much, you know, they want too much work home balance kind of thing. They're not punctual. They're, you know, all these things. Now, again, I'm not saying that millennials are perfect. However, to your point, to me, millennials, though, have brought to the conversation how work doesn't need to be unemotional. Am I correct in that?
Oh, let me tell you what happened on my team just last week. So I'm a little bit of a crazy person right now because on top of all the consulting work we have a book launch, and that's another 5 full-time jobs. So I got a call from one of my younger team members on a Monday morning asking to speak with me. And she said to me, "I know you're very intense right now. I'm completely with you, but please do not text me on the weekends."
Bold.
So yes. First I'm like, okay, wait a second. Do you not realize that we have a book? That was my first defensive move was to go into, wait, you've got this all wrong. We've got stuff to do. What I said instead was, "I can't tell you how proud I am of your courage."
Wow.
Okay. You talk about awareness. That's awareness right there, right?
Yes.
To take a breath. Yeah,
to take a breath. And so I said, "I can't promise. I'm not going to text you on the weekends, but I will be very intentional." And so I use that story as an illustration, Melissa, to your point. Yes, the work will still get done. There are seasons in our life that are a little more intense than others, but we all have to come to the table with a sense of what's going on inside of me and how does that impact the people around me? And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about leaders creating psychologically safe places for their people. We want people to say, "Wait a second, I don't like that," or "that felt intrusive," or "that felt critical when you said it that way." We want people to talk about that because what we know is those kind of environments allow for the innovation and the productivity that organizations are after. It's not having those psychologically safe places that get in the way of innovation and get in the way of productivity and engagement.
How do you change leaders' minds on that, though? Because from my perspective, saying something like that to a leader in my company would be disrespectful. Mm-hmm. So that would be a major shift for me to be able to say to one of my superiors, "Please don't text me on the weekend." I would never. Do you know what I'm saying? Because my mindset is that would be disrespectful, that, you know, that someone who's a superior sets the tone for the company culture, not someone who is lower down on the totem pole. Does that make sense? Am I the crazy one here?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I believe that leaders do set the tone. And I guess the tone I set was, or is, "I want to hear from you." Now, the other thing is, and I say this to leaders all the time, is if we want to empower people, we also have to have accountability riding shotgun with empowerment. And empowerment is an inside job. I don't believe Jen, you or Melissa, you or that I can empower anybody. I don't think so. I think we can create a safe environment for people to be themselves and to encourage them to find their own inner strength, because they have to empower themselves.
No, that's a great point. I mean, I reflect on all the leaders that I enjoyed working with, and they certainly were the ones that if I was in dire straits, I could come to them on an emotional level and say something, as opposed to the micromanagers who just always seemed to feel like I wasn't going to get the job done, so they had to look at me 3 times as hard. But I want to throw in women to that, because I think when you talk about innovation in the workplace and leaders who are closed to the idea of having any kind of, adaptive mentality to the environment of their workforce. You know, when there's a lot of mothers who are not in the workforce because of this,
amen.
And you're losing so much talent because you're not allowing a woman to be a mother and an employee. So how do you address that with leaders?
I mean, right. We're in this terrible phase right now that they're calling the Great Resignation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the pandemic has given people time to reflect what's important. And so organizations that don't match their actions with their words around things like engagement and purpose and caring about their employees are going to find themselves at a grave disadvantage over time. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of my clients are really grappling with this Great Resignation phase right now. And they're thinking about how to attract and retain talent. Saying the right things is really different from behaving in ways that encourage people to empower themselves. And that's where we have to focus our attention, is the gap between words and actions. We have to do that at home too. So that's where I'm helping my clients really focus. You say this, but are you behaving this way?
Mm-hmm. That is so good. And it really is true all the way through an organization.
Right.
Like you said, all of us are leaders. So leadership at every level, not just at the top levels. I want to know what you think a connected leader is, because this is the name of your new book, The Connected Leader. What does that mean exactly?
So because of my own journey, my own story, my own emphasis on being the most emotionally and spiritually awakened person I can be, and my work, I realized that, okay, a few things. One, yes, we are wired to connect neurobiologically. We know that. There's tons of research saying that our desire to connect is as strong as our need to find safety, water, food. So we have that. And yet, most people don't know how to connect in healthy ways. Healthy ways. We have a lot of connection that passes for connection, but it could be connection to fit in, or it could be connection to please people, or it could be connection to a substance or a drug or drinking, because that helps take the edge off or helps us to feel a little bit less stressed. So there's all these unhealthy connective patterns going on. And over the course of my story and my work, I've identified 7 strategies that help us to connect first and foremost to ourselves, and then to take that on the road, so to speak, and take those skills to connect more deeply to others. And in that process, we also start to connect more deeply to a spiritual presence.
Mm-hmm. Do you think also with that, that in a work environment, that they're always, the pattern of thinking is always problem solve it, problem solve it, problem solve it, where you want to work in an environment where you celebrate the wins. You know, Jen and I, in our history, we have worked together on shows. And I remember a colleague saying to us one time when we were part of something successful, we just kept going. And she was like, I wish we had just stopped and really celebrated our win and what we've accomplished instead of just going for the next thing. And that's always stuck with me, on the fact that it seems that we're very, I don't want to say glass half empty, but it's more of, we're just used to solving problems. But if problems are all that's a part of our world, no wonder people tend to not be satisfied.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's a very addictive process. Because we're addicted to the next outside solution that we hope is going to make us feel good about ourselves. But really, there's no outside solution or trophy or accolade that's going to solve an inside problem. And we all have our own inner challenges. So I have to tell you a story in alignment with that, Melissa. A couple of weeks ago, after a 1,000 copies of my book arrived from my publisher, we were in the midst of all kinds of promotions, you know, social media, speaking engagements, all kinds of things. And I was feeling very grateful and overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And I sat quietly and I realized that I was not really celebrating this huge accomplishment. I mean, a major publishing house, a major book, and just the journey of writing my story. So I did something I hardly ever do. I asked for what I need, which shows me that somehow or other, this emotional and spiritual awakening work is working. And I called one of my dearest friends and I said, I really want to celebrate this book and I would like you to throw me a party. I said, I want a small party, just our intimate tribe. This is not like for our 300 closest, whatever. Right. I would just want to hit the pause button and have my small tribe say, yay, like, well done. And they're all a part of it. They're all in the acknowledgments. So it's all of us together. But yes, we have to, instead of thinking, what's the next social media post? What's the next speaking engagement? What's the next podcast?
Well, and I commend you on that, because there's so many people that would have been embarrassed to have to ask somebody to throw them a party.
Well, part of me thought, you know, dang, where's everybody? Like, where's the balloons? Like, why aren't you showing up?
But nobody's a mind reader and they're all busy too, right? And they assume that somebody else is taking care of it, usually.
That, and they also know that I like a very low-key approach. And so I think we have to find our way through what's humility and what's also taking care of ourselves. And that's a real, I'm much more comfortable in giving than in asking for someone to give to me. So
I don't think that's unique. I think that's all of us, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You know, I was reflecting on leaders that have been in my life in different ways. And to me, if they have one common thread, it would be that they are very comfortable in their own skin. So I wonder, Karen, when you go in and work with these big companies, can you sense that from the strong leaders right away? You know, is it something that you can detect? It's like, do you have leader dar? Do you know what I mean?
One of my gifts is really being intuitively tuned in. So the work that I do with leaders is very transformative. And yes, I can easily help them to see what's going on with them. Like, what are the emotional or relational or spiritual patterns that are getting in the way of them being even more effective at work? Are they able to listen to themselves and therefore to others? Are they able to be empathetic, which always starts with self-compassion? Are they able to navigate the stress of change in a way that gives hope to other people? So I've had a lot of calls from people's spouses to say that the work that we're doing on leadership in at work is also helping the family.
Oh, I bet. Oh, yeah. Because yes, I tend to date alpha females. And so I would be one of those wives. No, but I was thinking that, you know, that there tends to be, or historically, maybe I'm old fashioned in my ideology about this, but, you know, driven A type personalities make up a lot of leaders, right? They're just, they're ambitious and they're striving. And usually they're the ones that are so laser focused that they are oblivious to the needs of others around them or the things that are going on. So, you know, is that true? Is my assumption true? And so thus why your work is so important, so that they can slow down a second and see that it's not just them, that their team is actually a vital part of what they do.
Yes. Yes. And that it's not just about the numbers, but it's interesting in that the more they start to tune in to the needs around them, the better the business metrics get.
Wow.
Because people become more invested and more engaged. Now, I also say to a lot of the top leaders, look, work is work. It's not summer camp. So while we have to learn to show up to be more empathetic, and empathy is one of those research points that is now showing that the more empathetic cultures have business, better business metrics. Okay, so it matters. But when we show up with empathy, it doesn't mean that anything goes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that we have to have a 24/7 kumbaya. What it means is I see you, I hear you, I understand. And what do we now need to do given the space that you're in?
Because leaders are important. And that's the other thing, you know, employees have to take it upon themselves that if you're not in a leadership position, that you do have to follow a leader. Like that's the only way a dynamic like that is going to work. So there's a responsibility, I think, on the employees too, to understand that, yes, there's a give and take, but you were there you've committed yourself to get the final goal done, however that needs to be done.
Yes. So my husband was very sick for 2.5 years and he died 6 months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
With Alzheimer's. So it was a brutal journey. And there were days when I could not show up to work. And so I had to learn to say, I can't do this conference call today, but I can do it first thing tomorrow morning. So, and people learned that it was okay to not be able to deliver all the time, but that you also have to have an alternative solution because work goes on and people depend on us, whether they're our clients or our team members, right? So it's okay to hit the pause button and to ask for help, but we also have to have a recommitment kind of a conversation. I can't do this, but I can do that. And does that work for you? Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that's definitely more collaborative of an approach, but it's not getting out of it with empathy, right?
That's right.
What goes back to, you know, when you talk about connective, like, you know, your book, Jim, you know, brought it up earlier about connective leadership, where again, it's, I could see how if I'm a part of a team that has my back and I have theirs, like Jen and I, you know, when we created this podcast, we're both mothers of young kids. And there are times in which I'm like, Jen, I can't do it. And she's like, Melissa, I can't do it. And it's like, but there's no judgment there because we know it's going to get done. Right. So, I mean, yes. and to be a part of a larger community in a company, because admittedly, I am not a part of a large company. Admittedly, I work on my own since the pandemic for these very reasons we talk about, which is my life has dramatically changed. And so I need flexibility. And I have yet to find the partnership in which I can have that flexibility. But yes, how wonderful it would be to work with a leader that saw my talents. And thus in doing so, I'm committed to them and I'm a loyal employee. So I could see how the metrics go up because employees, if they felt like they're seen and appreciated,
right,
why would they leave? Why would they leave? They wouldn't leave.
They wouldn't leave. And most people do not leave companies. The research shows that most people leave their manager. So if we want to retain talent, we have to be investing in all the different levels of management in a company to help people see themselves as chief connection officers throughout the company. If people feel connected to you, the chances of them leaving go way down.
That's big. That is huge.
Yeah, repeat that again.
Yes.
People don't leave companies.
They leave managers.
They leave managers. Yeah.
They leave managers.
Because if I'm thinking like, yep, I mean, that's
right. Yeah. You think back to every job you've ever left, you're going,
the reason I left places I left were because of the management, not because of the company itself. You're right.
That's so true.
Right.
I cannot wait to read your new book, Karen. I'm so excited.
I can't wait.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is
the
great.
Connected Leader, available November 23rd. It is the 7 strategies to empower your true self and inspire others. I cannot wait to read it. I know we're going to get so much out of it. And if you want to learn more about Karen, maybe we've got some CEOs and COOs listening right now. You can hire her to help the leaders in your company, KarenJHardwick.com. And you can also follow her on Instagram at Karen J. Hardwick. And find out more about her there. I just love the content that you're posting. So I know you said social media was stressing you out and overwhelming you, but I want to reassure you that you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I enjoy following you.
Thank you. There's a big nod to my social media team, much younger than I am, who's dragging me kicking and screaming into that world. So.
Well, now, Karen, you're not released yet, okay? Because we do something here on The Frenzy called The Frenzy Five, where we get to know our guests a little better. They're unique questions that nobody else is asking. So if you're ready, we shall begin.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Karen, where is your cozy, happy place?
In my big white chair in my keeping room.
What's a keeping room, if you don't
mind?
It's
that little room off the kitchen with a fireplace that people gather in. It's the keeping room.
Oh, I love that. That sounds, there's the title of your second book. Okay. The second question in our Frenzy Five is, what's your favorite framed thing in your home?
A photograph of my son and I.
The one walking side by side that his girlfriend took?
That one's not framed yet. Okay. It's another one. Yeah.
All right. See, full circle. All right. So number three on the Frenzy Five is, what is your most memorable birthday?
My most memorable birthday is last year when my son just put together a beautiful day for me.
Oh, sweet boy. Yeah. What's a daily routine or ritual that you stick to?
My morning routine, prayer, meditation, yoga, journaling, coffee.
And finally, what fashion trend did you jump on? And this could be any era or age.
Oh gosh, that is leaving me speechless. I have no idea.
We can like shoulder pads from the 80s, bell bottoms,
ironing your hair in the 70s.
Oh yeah, that's right. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey, so it had to do something with big hair and curling irons.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the only thing that there it is. There you go. I love it.
Fantastic. Karen, thank you so much for just being so generous and sharing all this amazing information. We can't wait to read the book, The Connected Leader, available November 23rd. And check out more at KarenJHardwick.com. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much. Bye.
Is there a friend of yours who would enjoy this episode? Please share this with her. And on Apple Podcasts, here's what you do. You click on the three dots at the top right corner, and then in the drop-down menu, select share episode, and then you can share it however you want. The green messages option will let you text it right to a friend.
We would love for you to also sign up for our weekly email where we send the episode right to your inbox. We make it very easy for you. We also include links on things we discuss and give you some deeper insights to the topics that we cover. And it's how you can also get into our private Facebook group by signing up at the frenzy.com today.
And if you are enjoying the Frenzy podcast with Melissa Carter and me, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to podcasts and leave us a review. That helps us more than you can imagine. And we really want to reach more people just like you.
And here is your reminder, this is the most important thing we do, right? Is to help you share your story. That's the point of all of this. Open up about your story with trusted friends. Your story absolutely matters.
Please follow The Frenzy on Instagram. That's at The Frenzy with a ZY at the end of friend. If you want to share about the show, tag us so that we can repost it and thank you.
We are everywhere, okay? We're accessible to you everywhere because we also are on YouTube. We have a Frenzy YouTube channel. We finally have a vanity URL, the Frenzy Podcast. So please go to our YouTube channel and you can see some extended interviews, see some bloopers, see what we look like. If you don't know what we look like, again, YouTube, the Frenzy Podcast.
So exciting. The Frenzy is hosted and produced by Melissa Carter and me, Jen Hobby.
Sound editing by Bo Johnson. Original soundtrack produced by Tammy Hurt for Placement Music. Written and recorded by Mark Dannell.
The Frenzy celebrates friendships over 40. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. We love your friendship.
All right, until next week, trust your guts,
share your story,
and stop lying about your age.
We'll see you on Monday.